Imagine there's no America. It's easy if you try. Just a big Muslim mess. No stars and stripes to fly. Imagine all our people living as Islamic slaves. Imagine no rock or country music. Isn't that hard to do? No baseball or hot dogs. As far as freedom goes, we're screwed. Imagine all our pretty girls wearing those awful black sheets. You may say I'm a doom and gloomer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll wake the heck up. Imagine there are no possessions. That's the Muslim plan. No need for Ford or Chevy. It's a veritable sucker stand. Imagine all our people. You may say I'm a doom and gloomer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll wake the hell up, and our nation will be strong. You may say I'm a doom and gloomer, but I'm not the only one. Hope someday you wake the hell up, and our nation will be strong.
Hello, welcome to Civilization Jihad Awareness, the show where truth wins every time. Now, I want to talk to you a little bit about where the term Civilization Jihad comes from. It's not something I created. It is something that has been around for, since the 90s, we've heard about this. This term has been around in the United States since the 90s. It was actually created in 1991, at least in written form, by the North American Muslim Brotherhood when they wrote the explanatory memorandum. And we discovered this only in 2003, and it was used in two trials, the largest terrorism finance trials the United States has ever seen. There may be more yet, because I'm hoping to see Islamic Relief Fund be the next ones to go. But this document was discovered again and used in the Holy Land Foundation trial. So I'm just going to read one paragraph from that document. And it basically, it says, this: understanding the role of the Muslim Brotherhood in North America. The process of settlement is a civilization jihadist process, with all the word means. The Ikhwan must understand that their work in America is a kind of grand jihad in eliminating and destroying the Western civilization from within and sabotaging its miserable house by their hands and the hands of the believers, so that it is eliminated and God's religion is made victorious over all other religions. Without this level of understanding, we are not up to this challenge and have not prepared ourselves for jihad yet. It is a Muslim's destiny to perform jihad and work wherever he is and wherever he lands until the final hour comes. And there is no escape from that destiny except for those who choose to slack. But would the slackers and the mujahideen be equal? Wow. And Kel is in first in the chat room. Thank you, Kel. Now, having read that piece, I want to get right into what I think is very, very important these days. It's kind of two things at the same time. How do we talk to Muslims when they come to us and present questions? How do we talk? It's pretty much the same way you talk to liberals. count them as the same. How do you respond to them? I'm going to say exactly the same manner. So what does that mean? First of all, it's like three steps. Three steps, I would say. First one, listen. Let them go all out. Let them have their rant, their rave, their complaint, their say. But here's the catch. You have to be armed. What do I mean by that? I'm not talking about carrying a gun. I'm not talking about carrying a knife. I'm talking about carrying the most lethal weapon that is known to man, knowledge. You have to be prepared. You have to be ready. Some of that is simply keeping up on the news. Others, you're going to have to do some reading. You're going to have to read from people like myself, Bill Warner, and many others who have gone on this. You can watch videos by David Wood, apostate prophet. Become armed. Be ready to give an answer. Now, that's actually in the Bible. It talks about being ready to give an answer. So think about that. That is how you reply to Muslims and to liberals. So let me give you an example. And this is not on Islam. I'm just going to give you an example today of what happened. I was taking an Uber to go get my MRI for my knee finally. And as I'm taking the Uber, we're having a discussion, and she figures out I like Trump. I didn't say anything to her about Trump. I didn't say it at all. But she figures it out. Then she asked me, so what do you think of Trump's wall? I says, you know, what's funny about that is that Trump stole that thing from the Democrats. She's like, what? I says, yeah, my nephew under Obama as a CB was ordered to go down and build the wall. So what did that mean? It's crazy. I start talking to her how he was ordered to be down there. The Democrat president, President Obama, ordered him to start building that wall. And how the Democrats were all for spending money on walls back then. And how it's so important back then that they would build walls, that we've even built walls in other countries. And they're still doing it today. The Democrats are sending money to other countries to build walls. So what happened? She didn't know how to answer. She can't say it's wrong to build the wall because all of a sudden she's got nothing to defend herself. See, usually the liberals, the Muslims, they have all this anger. They want to shout at you. They want to scream and yell at you and tell you you're wrong. We have to steal that from them. How? By being knowledgeable. Hit them back hard. What am I telling? I'm not telling you to punch them. I'm saying, tell the truth and don't give them time to play and whine around what the issue is. Get it all out there. So the truth of the matter on the wall is the Democrats were for it before they were against it. That's the simple thing. However, in this case, most Democrats today are either stupidly foolish and forgot what they were for, or they are too young and don't know. The vast majority are simply stupid and forgot. But those who are too young, we have to look at that. Can they have, in many ways, they don't have the excuses that the older people do. But again, when you have flip-floppers like Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, you don't have a choice. You have to educate them. So what am I saying? How do we talk to Muslims? How about this one? I've had a conversation recently with a Muslim driver, and he was talking about how Islam is really about peace. I let him go on and on for a while about how Islam has to do with peace. Then I said, according to Islam, and you know, you have to accept Sharia, you have to accept all this other, I'm going to start talking about what it says, what it accepts. You can't change the Quran. You can't update it. I'm going on all these things. All right. And according to the Quran, the way to best interpret it is whatever was said last is the most important today. Here's the term, abrogate what was said before. So we're having this conversation. Your God contradicts himself. He told you something to be, you know, about being peaceful at one time, but if he gives his last thing he tells you to do is encouraging violence, then all those peaceful verses are gone. If that's the rule of abrogation, right? And he's sitting there nodding his head. So let's talk about some of those last things said. I mean, we talk about things like Surah 9. And all of a sudden, they have nothing to stand on. So is Islam, so there, all this time they spent yelling and screaming, Islam is really peace. What do you mean? Peace is for the non-Muslim? Is that what you're saying? Because under Sharia, a Muslim can kill a non-Muslim with no penalty. Is that a peaceful religion? Not in my book. This is the stuff I'm talking about tonight. Again, talking and telling the truth to people who claim to have the truth has to be done with knowledge. You have to be listening to, again, I love Apostate Prophet. I love David Wood's stuff. And there are many, many others who are out there now doing this work. Listen in to the Global Patriot Radio, and you'll hear people every night giving you the truth on this stuff. It's important you get the knowledge you need and share it. Why does share? What's the importance of share? If you don't share what you know, you don't keep it. That's important to remember. If you do not share what you know, you do not keep it. It gets filed away in unimportant land. And you have to dig and dig and dig before you find it in that cluttery brain of yours. Use what you know. Now, I want to get into some of the incredible, oddly incredible good news in some ways, but this news has to do with exposures. Who's getting exposed? Well, I'll start with, let me skip that one, come right back to it. This news came from the Washington Examiner. And it came on January 7th, a few days ago. And I pulled this one out because of the story behind it. So the headline here is, sorry, the story is by Diana Stancy Correll, January 7th with the Washington Examiner. The story is Mike Pompeo, we've taken down 99% of the ISIS caliphate. 99% is pretty good, wouldn't you say? Now, if 99% are taken down, what does that mean? Have we basically won? Yes. Now, if the rest of that country can't beat the ISIS when only 1% of them are left, they're a sorry lot, aren't they? They don't know how to fight for their own freedom, do they? Or their freedom is simply not important to them. That's an important thing to understand. Now, when I say this, I'm going to skip ahead to the next story. What happens when you have a person who was fighting for them and belongs to your country? This week, also on January 7, from the BBC, two American Islamic State fighters captured by Syrian militia. Well, if you want to call in and tell me your thoughts on this issue, please do. And the call-in number is 319-527-6706. I'd love to hear someone call in and give their thoughts on this issue, because I'll read this while I'm checking, and if you call, I'll stop and have you on. Please press 1 if you're calling in so your number pops up in my studio. So again, that call-in number is 319-527-6706. What do you think should be done when people from your country were caught fighting for the enemy? I know what it's called here. It's treason. I know what the penalty is here. It's death. So Again, you can call in. Again, the area code 319-527-6706. I'm going to go right to the story and start reading it, but please do call in. Okay, this story is, to me, a very important story. Two American men fighting for the Islamic State group in Syria have been captured, according to the U.S.-backed Syrian Militia Alliance. The Syrian Democratic Forces said on Sunday they had captured Warren Christopher Clark from Houston, Texas, and Zaid Abed Ahmed during fighting. According to the alliance, the men were caught planning a terrorist attack on fleeing Syrian civilians. They were arrested along with suspected fighters from Ireland and Pakistan. Pentagon spokesman Sean Robertson told U.S. media, "We are aware of open source reports of reportedly American citizens currently in custody who were believed to be fighting for ISIS. However, we are unable to confirm this information at this time." U.S. officials have previously estimated that the Syrian Democratic Forces have more than 700 foreign fighters in custody, coming from around 40 different nations. The men were arrested along with two Pakistanis and one Irishman in an operation to clear a region of northern Syria of remaining Islamic State fighters, says the SDF. According to Seamus Hughes from George Washington University's Program on Extremism, Mr. Clark had submitted a CV and cover letter to the Islamic State asking to get a position teaching English to students in the Islamic State. According to the New York Times, he graduated from the University of Houston before moving to Saudi Arabia and Turkey to teach English. His father, Warren Clark, told the newspaper, "My son would not be involved in anything along those lines." Yeah. How many want to bet he had a clue? According to Mr. Clark's resume, he taught English as a second language as a substitute teacher for the Fort Bend Independent School District between January 2009 and 2011. The SDF did not say where in the U.S. Mr. Hamid comes from, but according to extremism researchers, he may originally be from Trinidad. Get that. Okay. Claiming to be American, but originally from where? Trinidad. Simon Coffey, who was writing a book about Trinidad Islamic State fighters, told the New York Times that Mr. Hamid's name appears on a database of 130 men from the Caribbean island nations who are believed to have joined the group. In an ISIS propaganda video from 2015, a man believed to be Mr. Hamid talks about his conversion, his conversion to Islam, and his difficulties practicing his faith in his homeland. "Even though I had very comfortable life in Trinidad, there was something that's telling me, you know, that I don't belong in this place." So the question is, are these people American? Where are they from? Something to think about. Now, Mr. Clark is said to be an American. Mr. Hamid said really to be, he might be from the U.S. also, but he's from Trinidad. What would you do if this is your country that these people are supposed to be from and they were fighting against your soldiers? What do you think should be done? My thoughts. They don't come home ever. If we take them home, there's a required process for execution for treason. If they want to live, they stay forever away from the United States. I'm talking about staying away from properties or extension, embassy, whatever. Any little piece of the United States. You set foot in it. If you've committed this crime, the United States has a right to take possession of you, charge you with treason, and execute you as after that trial is done. That's what I think should be done. Will they be talking about this in the news? Probably not. Too many fearful politicians afraid to get this truth out. What do I think will happen? I would not be surprised if these men are refused access home. How do you do that? Well, if they had an American passport it just gets stamped invalid. That's a pretty good solution. Can they ever come back? You put them on a no-fly list. You make sure their photos are seen and that they work with the computer so they can be identified. Something like this has to be done. They have to be kept from returning. Because if they fought for the enemy, what will they do when they return here? I mean, they're willing to kill American soldiers. Are you willing for them to live next door to you? I am not. So I think that is probably the best solution. Now, no one did dare to call in and discuss this. Maybe you all agree with me. I don't know, but that was an opportunity, and no one took it, sadly. Okay, going on. Investigative Project on Terrorism has blown up this week with some outstanding research pieces. One of them is by Haney Gorabba. I probably pronounced that name wrong and butchered it pretty well. But let me just read her article. Again, this is from the Investigative Project on Terrorism. Muslim Brotherhood affiliate suspected in tourist bus bombing. Now, what was it that Obama said about the Muslim Brotherhood? Does anybody remember what he said? Because I have it in my book. I think it's hilarious. He says, again, okay, let me get some history on that before I get into it. According to our past president, Obama, Mr. Obama, President Obama, if you want to call him that, he did not believe that the Muslim Brotherhood was a violent group. How do I know that? Well, it's pretty simple, because people like me helped write a petition, and it got signed by, let me see if I can get that information here. It's tons and tons of people. I have it down. Here we go. I'm just going to read this part. Keep in mind, this comes from my book, and the research to back it up is there. In 2013, a petition was written on whitehouse.gov to declare the Muslim Brotherhood a terrorist group. The petition carried 213,146 signatures. The White House did not respond to it until 1 year later in the last week of November 2014. Their response is below. You ready? We have not seen credible evidence that the Muslim Brotherhood has renounced its decades-long commitment to nonviolence. This is on the whitehouse.gov site, right? Who would that have belonged to at that point? Could it be President Obama? Yeah. Let me read some more. This is just insane, is what I should say. They didn't look at anything when they said that. They wanted to whitewash who the Muslim Brotherhood are. Now, I'm going to go back to this article by Haney Gorabba. Egyptian officials suspect a violent branch of the Muslim Brotherhood called the Hasim Movement is responsible for a December 28 terrorist attack that killed three Vietnamese tourists and an Egyptian tour guide. Authorities believe that the attack on a tourist bus near the Giza pyramids was in retaliation for a preemptive strike Egyptian security forces carried out 8 days earlier that killed eight Hasim militants and saw four others arrested. The raid on the Hasim hideouts aimed to thwart planned Christmas and New Year's attacks. Officials found stashed assault weapons, remote control planes, a drone chassis, and materials used to make improvised explosive devices, IEDs, that have been used in attacks similar to the tourist bus bombing. There were two cars belonging to Hasim seized with similar explosives used in the operation. The Egyptian High Council for Counterterrorism and Extremism, General Khaled Okasha, told UAE's, the United Arab Emirates, Al Ghad television. Quote, there were alerts that these Hasim cells desire to exploit the time of the year to conduct operations. The U.S. State Department's designated Hasim, Arms of Egypt Movement, and its sister group, Liwa al-Tahra, as terrorist organizations a year ago. Both groups are associated with, you guessed it, the Muslim Brotherhood. Hossam issued an emotional obituary when former Brotherhood Supreme Guide Mehdi Akif died in 2017, describing him as the champion Mujahid who fought the British occupation. The tyrant Nasser Sadat and Mubarak and the fascist military regime they didn't care for his age and sickness. In a televised confession after last month's raids, detained Hossam member Amr Ayman Al-Aden admitted being an active member of the Muslim Brotherhood. He said that he joined the Muslim Brotherhood's military, hear this, military cells, nonviolent group, huh? What do they need a military cell for? Through a recruiter named Yasser Al-Zaini, who is in Egyptian police custody. Al-Aden said Al-Zaini connected him to a trainer who took him to a terrorist camp outside Cairo. Again, the Muslim Brotherhood is supposed to be what? Nonviolent? Are you insane? Crazy. Okay. This article, I mean, say, if you have not read this article by investigativeproject.org, get there, read it today, share it out on as many social media platforms as you can. Why? Because you get idiots out there sharing information saying the Muslim Brotherhood is nonviolent. And the top idiot who did that or has done that is the past president, Obama. Again, it's his choice to do these things, not mine, and it's my choice to expose him for doing these insane things. Let me get going one more. Since we're still talking about the Muslim Brotherhood, let's get it all out there. This week, the Muslim Brotherhood had a plan for Europe. And Rami Dabas wrote in Jihad Watch on January 9th this article. He's a great writer. European media activists have found more than 180 Islamic organizations in Europe that under the category of non-governmental human rights associations are promoting the idea of creating a global caliphate and fighting against opponents of the Islamization of Europe. And they do it with the money of European taxpayers in the countries of the Middle East since 2010 when the main funding began. You caught that, right? They're using funds from Europe to create Islamization of Europe. Pay attention. You're going to see a theme developing pretty soon with my next story. This is scary stuff. Since 2010, when the main funding began, these organizations have received more than $300 million. Most of the organizations are associated with the Muslim Brotherhood International Movement, which is banned in many countries. The movement has the same goal with other organizations banned in most countries of the world, including Al-Qaeda, the Islamic State, the creation of a worldwide caliphate. But it is only now that other nonviolent methods are bringing these Muslims closer to their goal of conquering Europe. Today, the Muslim Brotherhood has the most extensive network of completely legal organizations in the old world, while they retain the closest of ties with Salafists and jihadis, which makes them even more dangerous than the militant radicals. Like I said, this is an excellent, excellent article. They organize European Muslims. They speak for them. They represent them. And today they are the loudest voice. Whether European Muslims like it or not, the largest number of these Islamic movements is found in the Great Britain. Okay, this is followed by Germany, Austria, Switzerland, Belgium, and France. These Islamic organizations were created and controlled by the Muslim Brotherhood and have Egyptian roots, as well as ties to the Palestinian Jihad movement, Hamas, and the state religious administrations of Turkey, known as Diyanet. Most politicians are fooled by the Muslim Brotherhood, and at the same time, they use them to advance their own agenda. The Islamists do not declare their real goals to the European public. Therefore, we are trying to show the tactics and ties to the jihadis and Sharia supremacists. Again, this is all about the Muslim Brotherhood using European finances to Islamicize Europe. I pulled this story because we've been talking about the dangers of the Muslim Brotherhood. Again, wait till you hear this next story. This goes on. In fact, the fight against Islamophobia, Islamists promote the claim that Islam is peaceful, and they carry on campaigns against those who oppose the Islamization of the European society. They put pressure on those who decide to tell the truth. A tough fight is being promoted even in social networks. For example, Facebook has a group, Report Anti-Islamic Pages, with more than 11,000 participants, led by people from Pakistan. They collect data about all users and groups, which in their opinion advocate anti-Islamic policies. For example, they bombarded the administration of the social networks and Facebook with letters called for blocking of the Republic of Atheist group, which has 1.6 million participants. At the same time, most European politicians only see the fight against Islamophobia as Islamic organizations simply promoting the rights of Muslims. That was the statement of the president of Austria, Alexander von der Bellen. In April, he said one of the TV channels that all of European women should wear headscarves as a sign of solidarity with Muslim women. According to activists, one of the active sponsors of efforts to combat Islamophobia is the billionaire George Soros. Over the past 6 years, his organization, the Open Society Foundation, has allocated $1.5 million in support of the Islamist organizations. Billionaires such as George Soros donate cash to support groups, which later will create chaos in Europe. Activists say that several cases of sponsoring organizations of the Muslim Brotherhood could be attributed to be a mistake, but this is a matter of numerous grants. Their main recipient is the European Network Against Racism. Its entire leadership is made up of members of, you guessed it, the Muslim Brotherhood, including the director, Michael Privet. Prior to that, he was vice president of the Forum of European Muslim Youth and Student Organization, which protects the rights of Muslim youth, and is part of the global network of the Muslim Brotherhood. Insane. This article goes on and on. I will not read it all. I do suggest you go to it again. That is, this article is at Jihad Watch. It's called The Muslim Brotherhood Plan for Europe and for a Global Caliphate. This article is just too lengthy for me to go in and read it all. It's mind-numbing. Again, we're talking about a global caliphate, what the Muslim Brotherhood want. And this is where? In Europe. Now, pay close attention. This one bothers me, and it's incredibly powerful, potent, and truthful. John Rossomondo, 2 days ago, wrote this for the Investigative Project on Terrorism. The article's entitled, Foundations, Indifferent to CARE's Leaders, Anti-Semitic and Pro-Terrorist Rhetoric. Now, CARE is Hamas in America. Hamas is a chapter of the Muslim Brotherhood. They say that in their charter. So, listen closely. They're talking about using non-Muslim sources to support Muslim Brotherhood here in the United States. That's including CARE. In this case, this article is all about CARE. So this is why this article is extremely important. Again, my suggestion, I will say, if you love what I'm going to be reading to you in the next few minutes, please do write to John Rossomondo at investigativeproject.org and thank him. Thank his boss, Steve Emerson, for this piece also. Thank the whole team there. This is important, outstanding information. Key points. Non-Muslim donors gave CARE more, just under $3 million in 2017 in the wake of President Trump's travel ban. CARE collected more from non-Muslim foundations in 2017 than in any other year. Non-Muslim Foundation view care as a civil rights organization. Listen to this. Non-Muslim foundations view care as a civil rights organization. Muslims don't view care as a civil rights organization. This is misinformation. CARES donors are indifferent to its documented ties to Hamas. Somebody explain to me how an organization directly linked to Hamas is allowed to operate legally in the United States. I have not heard a good answer to this day. I can't get the FBI to give me a straight answer. It's a religious organization. No. If it has ties to a terrorist organization labeled by who? The State Department under Clinton, it is not a legal organization in the United States. How do I know that? Read the law on terrorism. Read the law on sedition. Read the law on treason. This stuff is just infuriating. So, let me keep going here. CARES, largest non-Muslim donors, such as the Silicon Valley Community Foundation, SVCF, California Wellness Foundation, stand by CARE San Francisco Bay, as the Bay Area Executive Director, Zahra Billow, despite her anti-Semitic statements and support for Palestinian terrorism. To the FBI, Justice Department, prosecutors, and at least one federal judge, the Council on American Islamic Relations is a dubious organization led by executives tied to a U.S.-based Hamas support network. To social media followers, CARE officials include rabid anti-Semites, people who basely compare Israeli soldiers to ISIS, and who endorse slogans calling for Israel's annihilation. To dozens of liberal foundations, however, CARE is a deserving recipient of their largesse. An investigative project on terrorism analysis finds 16 state CARE chapters and its Washington, D.C.-based national office received at least 265 grants of more than $1,000 from non-Muslim foundations across the country since 2010, totaling nearly $5.47 million. Some of those funders paid for a study that, among other things, tried to cast a negative press that CARE and other groups gained due to the 2008 Holy Land Foundation. Hamas terror financing trial is as Islamophobic. These non-Muslim sources provided a small but significant percentage of the operating budgets for CARE and its chapters. Many of the grants support CARE civil rights litigation, programs supporting refugees and migrants and opposing Islamophobia and bullying efforts. The left sees Muslims as victims of Western racism, imperialism, and fascism, so it excuses their misbehavior, from hateful comments to genocide. The only exception is if Muslims are seen as Western lackeys, in which case the indulgence is righteously suspended, said Middle East Forum President Daniel Pipes. By investing in civil rights work as it advances its broader Islamist agenda, the foundation By investing in civil rights work as it advances its broader Islamist agenda, the foundation see CARE as a legitimate mainstream organization and not the offspring of a Hamas support network. To see a list of all the foundation grants to CARE, including the report, there just follow a link there. I'm going to get in some of that list, and I'm going to share this list. Why am I going to share this list? I'll tell you why. Because some of the names on this organization will blow your mind. I'm willing to bet some of you, like me, have some affiliations with some of these organizations. I know at least one that has to do with a group that I have for my retirement. It's mind-numbing. Let's go back here. Reframing the issue. CARE donors downplay Hamas ties. A 2013 report by the University of California Berkeley lecturer Hatem Bazium and Farid Senzai of Santa Clara University provided detailed information about Muslim demographics in the San Francisco Bay Area and surveyed 1,100 Muslims. The 16-county area is home to 250,000 Muslims, report claims, one of the largest Muslim populations in the United States. It included a passage portraying Islamist groups named in the HLF trial, including Kara's victims. An endnote in the report called the prosecution politically motivated. Let's see. Do you like terrorism? I don't. Do you want them to fund it through CARE? I don't. If you are willing for those things to happen, then you're right alongside with CARE. And you can say HLF was politically motivated. However, I don't think the U.S. is into having terrorism supported by people in the United States. So there's actual crimes on the books that have to do with that. So, yes, this was an important trial. Well, let's think about this. The Silicon Valley Community Foundation commissioned the report in conjunction with San Francisco Foundation, Marin Community Foundation, and Asian American Pacific Islanders and Philanthropy under the umbrella of the One Nation Bay Area Project, partnership aimed at assessing the best practices for funding Muslim groups. The study advises philanthropic institutions to support social and legal services for American Muslims to counter bullying and discrimination, aid immigrants, and to counter Islamophobia. APIP said the study could benefit philanthropists and foundations and be an important tool for advocacy and media purposes, given that data about the community has often been misrepresented. APIP members that have donated to CARE include, listen closely to this, Bank of America Charitable Foundation, Blue Shield of California Foundation, the Bush Foundation, California Community Foundation, Headwaters Fund for Justice, Levi Strauss Foundation, the Open Society Foundations, that one doesn't surprise me, Medtronic Communities Foundation, Conrad N. Hilton Foundation, Minneapolis Foundation, and Boston Foundation. Bazian is a founder of the Islamophobia Research and Documentation Project, which turns out academic papers through its Islamophobia Studies Journal, which probably are entirely non-academic by anybody else's standards other than that place, considering the low standards I see for Islam and the stuff that's published as graduate work with, so little truth and so little citations. It's just disgusting. Bazian is a founder of the Islamophobia He also smeared his fellow Muslims as Islamophobic. This is, again, we're talking about Hatem Bazian. If they support the Egyptians' military 2013 ouster of the Muslim Brotherhood-dominated government. So he said you were Islamophobic if you're Muslim and you don't like the politics that he has. In 2013 report, he and Senzai tried to minimize post 9/11 terrorist support prosecutions, saying Muslim leaders locally, religious, regionally, and nationally have been pursued legally for one reason or another. In addition, throughout the Holy Land Foundation case, the government listed other Muslim organizations as unindicted co-conspirators and thereby tarnishing their image and creating a cloud of suspicion. Heck yeah, if you got caught, again, unindicted means it's going to happen usually. I sure hope they do go back and start pursuing that. That's up to Trump. He could. He could tell his attorney general to pursue those today. I would love it if he did. It might make America safer. This article goes on and on about the organizations that will support CARE. What's nice about this article, they lay everything out about CARE, the connections, how they are tied to Hamas. And again, I'm going to skip down. This next section says donors. CARE is a mainstream civil rights and educational group. Such rhetoric, hateful rhetoric, is unfortunately common among CARE officials. Let me just go up one paragraph here. I'm just going to read some. Okay, here we go. CARE Michigan Executive Director Dawood Waleed defined CARE as a defenders of the Palestinian struggle in 2014 outside of a hearing for a now-deported Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine terrorist Razmi Oda Waleed. Like his CARE compatriots also bring civil rights suits on behalf of Muslims. Waleed's CARE Michigan colleague, Asha Noor, who works on CARE's Take on Hate program, proclaimed on Twitter that Israel engaged in genocide of the Palestinian people in December 6, 2017, tweet after President Trump announced he was moving the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem. It's a false charge aimed at generating hate towards Israel. Such hateful rhetoric is unfortunately common among CARE officials, however, but it has not given the foundations pause about underwriting CARE's operations. The California Wellness Program, which gave CARE's San Francisco Bay Area Chapter $350,000 grant in 2017, said its money goes to programs aimed at helping immigrant communities. So you gave $350,000 to an organization that pushes out hateful rhetoric that will only serve its own community. Now let's think about that. That means it will not serve Shiites. It will not serve Ahmadis. It will only serve Sunni Muslims. Keep this in mind. This article is just, it's long. Let me tell you why it has me so angry and so upset. When you start looking at who the sponsors are, it should freak you out. I'm going to read them off. Amazon Smile Foundation, $5,127 in 2016. Again, this is all money going to CARE. The Council on America-Islamic Relations, Hamas in America. The American Endowment Foundation. The Annenberg Foundation. Archie D. and Bertha H. Walker Foundation. They have 5 gifts. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 is over about $12,000. The Asian American Bar Association gave $5,000. The Asian American Bar Association of Greater Chicago, that gave, again, $5,000. AT&T Foundation, which gave close to $5,000. The Baker Brook Foundation gave $1,000. Blue Cross and Blue Shield Foundation of Minnesota gave $50,000. The Blue Shield Foundation of California gave, $50,000. Brooklyn Community Foundation gave $15,000. The Bush Foundation, get this, 2015 gave $7,500. Then they gave $10,000 later that year. In 2016, they gave $50,000, so that's $67,000 so far. In 2017, they gave them $100,000. $167,000 from the Bush Foundation. California Community Foundation. I'm not going to list, there's a whole bunch from them. Cleveland Foundation. Communities Foundation of Texas. Criminal Justice Initiative. C.O. Saladego Foundation was what that is. Cummings Foundation, Elmer and Eleanor Anderson Foundation, Daniel and Sophie K. Reber Charitable Trust, Elmer and Eleanor J. Anderson Foundation. Here's the one that bothers me a lot. Fidelity Charitable Gift Fund. Fidelity, you're going to be hearing a call from me. And you will not like it. Florida Bar Foundation, F.R. Bigelow Foundation, General Mills, anybody surprised there? Geraldine R. Douglas Foundation, GitHub Incorporated, Gravestar Foundation, Headwaters Foundation for Justice, that's not a surprise for me either, Hennepin County Bar Foundation, Hill Snowden Foundation, Hennepin County. Okay, how about this one? Intel Foundation. It's a lot of money they gave. the years. International Education and Health Department, Jacques Littlefield Foundation, Kyle and Sharon Krause Family Foundation, Lita and William Hamill Foundation, Levi Strauss, Literary International Incorporated. Well, could that be because they need people to be literate that are Muslims? I don't know. This goes on and on and on. This list is huge. How about this? The Proteus Fund, PayPal Giving Fund, Orange County Community Foundation, Open Society, we already knew about, Qualcomm Charitable Foundation, Renaissance Charitable Foundation, Sacramento Regional Community Foundation, St. Paul Foundation, Salesforce.com Foundation, Sarah Foundation, Schwab Charitable Fund. You know that Schwab Fund? That guy everybody wants you to invest his company? And they're giving money to CARE. Solidarity Giving. Solidarity Minnesota. Sound like commie groups? Southern California Gas Company, Southwestern Florida Community Foundation, Strozer Viren Family Foundation, Sunshine Foundation, Bank of America Charitable Foundation, Benjamin Fund Incorporated, Boston Foundation, California Wellness Foundation, San Diego Foundation, National Philanthropic Trust, Minneapolis Foundation. I'm not even listing them all, people. San Francisco Foundation, Seattle Foundation, Sunshine Foundation, Tides Foundation, Tom E. Daly Foundation, Troubadour Foundation, United Capital Boston Foundation, Vanguard Charitable's Endowment Program, Weingart Foundation, Wells Fargo Foundation, and again, I have not listed them all. The total from all of these organizations, according to the Investigative Project on Terrorism, over the from 2014 to present to 2018, was $5,472,159. I'm just kind of mind blown how this is allowed to continue, how CARE is allowed to continue. I'm beside myself. I just don't get it, and I'm kind of angry, and I love an answer. How is this legal? Please. Please, somebody tell me, because I can't figure it out. I can't get the FBI to explain it to me. I can't. All right. Here's a new one and an old one. I shared this article this morning, and I got an awful lot of responses, partly because of how I wrote about this. This article comes from memory.org. Their headline is this. Palestinian-American activist Linda Sarsour. Quote, Prophet Muhammad was a human rights activist. We don't need the West to teach us about feminism. Now, keeping in line with what I said earlier, here's how I wrote this. Oh, so a white man who had black slaves is now a human rights foundation guy. So a white man who had multiple wives, more than he's allowed under Sharia, but he's special, is a human rights guy. A white man who believes that sex slaves are a good thing, and he had black slaves, black sex slaves, so we know this. It's in the Quran, it's in the Hadith. He's now a human rights guy. A guy who said a woman is only worth her testimony is only worth half of a guy's. Court of law. He's a human rights guy. Anybody see the lack of logicality here? There's no logic in this woman's brain. She's a true simpleton. And we need more people to speak out and tell the truth. Insane. Insane. So that one has had me angry since yesterday, but people are really – it's responses I got to that article are kind of humorous. All right. I don't always – this is a rare source for me to quote from. ConservativeReview.com. Jordan Schachtel, I like his articles, and I'll tell you, I do pay attention to them usually. But this is called Report. Facebook and Twitter consult with terror-tied care. Here we go again. And who gets banned from platforms? Oh. So I'm kind of surprised they haven't come and yelled and screamed at me, considering I do share every day. And I do mention their name a lot, but they haven't banned me yet. But they did get me shadow banned. I am shadow banned on Twitter. You get to see my stuff, but anybody you share my articles with never sees them. Insane. So let me start this off. The Hamas-tied Council on American-Islamic Relations, which is best known as an unindicted co-conspirator in the largest terrorism financing case in U.S. history, appears to have access to high-ranking Facebook and Twitter executives and has communicated with these individuals about who should be allowed to stay on their platform, according to a Wall Street Journal report published Tuesday. The Wall Street Journal report that CARE officials complained to Twitter about activist Laura Loomer, citing a tweet which she called the anti-Semitic representative Ilhan Omar, Democrat from Minnesota, an anti-Semite, and an apologist for Sharia law. Loomer was later permanently banned from Twitter. Zaru Billow, the executive director of CARE San Francisco chapter, was quoted in the journal piece as an individual who appears to have special access to both Twitter and Facebook. The council doesn't often step in to advocate against other users, said Executive Director Zaru Billow, but did so in the case of Mrs. Loomer, based on her previous comments about Muslims, the piece explains. Yet the Wall Street Journal fails to note that Billow herself is a proven radical extremist. In tweets that remain publicly available, Billow has expressed her support for an Islamic caliphate and Sharia law. She also claims in multiple tweets that ISIS is on the same moral plane as America and Israeli soldiers. American and Israeli soldiers, adding that our troops are engaged in terrorism. Here's one of her statements. How do we get from Memorial Day to this? Since you started, do you condemn U.S. soldiers using our tax to kill innocents? Pretty extreme, don't you think? But she has the right to go get Laura Loomer banned. Billow also wrote this. Who has killed more civilians? U.S. soldiers, U.S. police, the IDF, or ISIS? Scary stuff. Here's another quote from Billow. And to be clear, I would argue that many of our troops are engaged in terrorism. Should you have your rights shredded too? So she's now, and this is important to understand, she's actually naming somebody and she is threatening them to have your rights shredded. She's threatening to take away their First Amendment right. And that's through her power with Facebook and Twitter. Zaru Billow. Scary stuff. And I suggest reading this article. There's a lot more details in it, but it's something to think about. That CARE, the organization that believes it has the power to limit your freedom of speech, is out there. And Facebook and Twitter are actively listening to them. The Hamas in America movement has a voice in social media. Thank you, Mark Zuckerberg. What an idiot. All right. Now let's get into some articles on Canada. Canada has an icon that I love, Spencer Fernando. He has an article this week called Poll. Majority of Canadians say Canada is too welcoming to immigrants. Now, I'm not going to read the entire article, but I love his points. When it comes to immigration, the political establishment is ignoring the will of the Canadian people, this article says. An Ipsos survey conducted by Global News reveals the majority of Canadians are rejecting the open borders immigration policies of the Trudeau government. Survey shows 54% saying Canada is too welcoming to immigrants. The numbers are no surprise. Under the Harper government, Canada already had some of the highest per capita immigration numbers in the world. For example, Canada was bringing in about 250,000 newcomers every year, about a quarter of the number of immigrants to the United States, despite the U.S. being nearly 10 times bigger in population. Without consulting Canadians, despite all the polls showing opposition to more immigration, Trudeau has massively increased immigration numbers. He's bringing the yearly total to 360,000 per year, even though less than 10% of Canadians have said they want more immigration. And that number doesn't even include the massive spike in illegal border crossers, something the Trudeau government basically encouraged on social media and then did nothing to stop. Additionally, 40% of the poll respondents say that an increase in immigration could hurt the chances of Canadian citizens seeking work. While the political establishment always dismisses those concerns, the concerns actually have a basis in reality. While a reasonable level of immigration can benefit an economy, massive immigration spikes have the effects of reducing the bargaining power of individual workers, as there are more people competing for fewer jobs. Makes sense, people. Is this not one of the things that Trump has been saying? Interesting. I like Fernando. He's right. The Canadians that are my friends, that I know closely, are very, very upset. Last week, I shared an article about a Canadian Muslim cleric who said, Merry Christmas is worse than murder. This week, CTV News of Canada says, quoted the imam as saying, my remarks were taken out of context. But he's not apologizing. And he's not clarifying. So, when you don't apologize and you don't clarify and you're saying this, you're really saying, screw you, it's okay what I said. And I believe it. So, he tried to put in some rhetoric. And this, if you want to find this article, it's on January 7th. It's written by Cillian O'Brien. It's kind of humorous. And I say that because when you try to say one thing and you really mean another and you get caught with your pants down, it's not a good thing. So let me go on to, I'm into the European group articles already. And we are up to 7:02. I do want to thank the people who are in the chat room. Bigfoot, Doc DLB, Gary Kumper, Kel, the beautiful Kel Fritzy, and Vorpal. Wow. Now, you're going to see another theme coming here with these articles, and this is mostly with Great Britain, and again, the theme has to do with the Muslim Brotherhood. It's the way the articles came this week, people. There is an awful theme coming, and it has to, again, do with the Muslim Brotherhood's control of Islamization, and if you think they don't have control, they don't have power, sit back and watch. These are the people who have no problem with sitting around for 50 years and watching change come about slowly. And if it's just a little bit of change in their favor, they're happy. Because they figure another 50 years, you'll be Muslim. So it's only 100 years, and what they did is effective. Crazy, crazy stuff, but that's what they're doing. Now, this first article I have on the UK comes from Soren Kern from Gates Tone Institute. It's important that you pick up or subscribe to Gates Tone Institute. If you can financially support them, please do. His article came out January 8th, 2019, Multiculturalism and the Transformation of Britain in 2018, Part 2. Okay, this is Part 2. Here's one of the things in here. July 1st. Mubarak Ali, a 35-year-old former ringleader of a Telford child sex abuse gang, was sent back to prison after breaching the terms of his parole. In 2012, Ali was sentenced to 22 years in prison for child prostitution offenses, but was automatically released in 2017 after serving only 5 years. Wow. Telford MP Lucy Allen said there are many questions to be answered about why Ali was released and also about how the justice system treats so-called grooming cases. Now he's back in jail. Justice demands that he must serve the remainder of his custody in jail, his sentence in custody. Anything less would show a casual disregard for the nature of his crimes. July 2nd, Abdul Raif, 51-year-old imam from Rockdale, was imprisoned for 1 year and 5 months after admitting to assaulting more than 20 children at a mosque. Inspector Phil Key of Greater Manchester Police said Abdul Raif is a nasty bully of a man who beat the children in his classes until it became normalized. The children were left cowering and holding onto their ears, their arms, and their legs after he repeatedly used violence as a punishment. The parents of the children had no idea that they were leaving their children in the care of a man who would leave them writhing in pain and covered in marks and bruises. Raif is different from Abdul Raif, 49, formerly of Rockdale, who was convicted as part of a child sex gang that targeted girls as young as 13 in the town. July 3rd, again, this is all stuff that happened this year. A judge in Iraq said that British jihadis found in the country would be executed by hanging. Abdul Sadar Barakadar, spokesman for Supreme Judicial Council, said that such a form of capital punishment would be good for British security. The punishment, as much as it seems strong, will affect the security of your country. I am sure there are hundreds of people in Britain at this moment thinking of committing similar crimes. That's why we as Iraqis, if we're tough in sentencing these people, they will think thoroughly before taking any action. Some 800 Britons have journeyed to Syria and Iraq to fight for the Islamic State. 130 have been killed. I mean, you hear these things. I only read a few there. The stuff in Gatestone and the work of Soren Kern documenting it all is incredibly important. So, again, like I say, if you have cash to throw their way, please do. This is an organization that could change the way things are because of how they listen. Next article. this is a UK article that has to do with a liberal waking up. I said that, a liberal waking up. What's happening? Oh boy. And I find this kind of humorous because of this person who she's been endorsed by and stuff. There's a lot of articles out there about who she is, this woman who's waking up. This comes from Jewish News, TimesOfIsrael.com. Government urged to stop paying Palestinian teachers over incitement in schools. Now, this is in the UK we're talking about now, and what it has to do with, they want to stop the payments of the UK funds going to areas of Palestine where they encourage people to be jihadis. Students we're talking about, as far as people. We're talking about children, preteens and teens. Dame Louise Elman, MP, presents to a 10-minute rule bill in Parliament, arguing that Britain should stop funding the preaching of martyrdom. A Labour MP has called for the government to stop paying just Palestinian teachers over concerns that children in the West Bank are being taught incitement against Israel. Dame Louise Elman, MP, who is the vice chair of Labour Friends of Israel, presented a 10-minute rule bill in Parliament on Tuesday, arguing that the British taxpayers are funding the teaching of curriculum that preaches martyrdom and jihad. The bill is supported by a handful of MPs, including Conservative Friends of Israel Chair Stephen Grab, LFI Director Jennifer Gerber, and it was being pushed because the government has failed to act on concerns. UK aid helps 24,000 children in the West Bank and school, but LFI Chair Joan Ryan, MP, has called for the UK to cut its aid to Palestinians by 14% and led a parliamentary debate on the topic last year. So again, what do they want to do? This woman's only talking about a 14% cut. Let's cut it altogether. Let's stop giving away funds to other countries. I know this is the UK, but if your country's in debt, don't give your money away. Keep it home. Stop giving money away. That has to happen here in the United States. It should be happening in other countries. It's simple economics. If you don't have money in your wallet, you can't give it away. Simple, simple, logical things like math. If you don't have money, you shouldn't be able to give it away. Now, this is a translation of an article from Austria. So, very rare I get articles straight from Austria. This is a translation. This should make you mad, too. Islamic fanatic was a ticking time bomb. Quote, I always said that this man is a ticking time bomb. He was totally confused, was constantly talking about Islam, wanted to convert all unbelievers, says the shocked neighbor of Krohn after the terrible bloodlust near Amstetten on Tuesday before the eyes of the common children at the age of 1, 3, 9, and 19. Senol, who was 37, is said to have stabbed his wife, the convert to Islam, Ariella S. The Turkish-born man is said to have grabbed a kitchen knife on Tuesday afternoon and stabbed his wife. An attempt to escape the four-year-old, the fourfold mother, ended at there. The raven should have missed her a third knife stab. Wow. The eldest son dialed the emergency call, but the doctors lost in the hospital fighting for the life of the woman, while Cobra officials stormed the apartment in which the alleged perpetrator had entrenched. About the motive can currently only be speculated. She wasn't wearing her. Wait till you hear why. They're going to tell you. Oh, my gosh. The fact is, here we go, next paragraph. Senol did not like the fact that his wife suddenly left the house without a burqa. And over again, according to insiders, he drifted around playgrounds and Christmas markets, neighbors, talking about Islam, infidels, and evil. So, she wasn't obeying him. I guess there's a right to beat her under Islam. She wasn't following Sharia. So, in his mindset, that gives him the right to hurt her. I mean, this is, yeah, there's a confusion here as to why he did it. No. The people in the community actually know. Yeah. He hurt her and killed her because she would not be Muslim enough for him. And under his belief structure, he's justified. This is sick and sad. How about this one? Now, there's two articles on this topic, and I'm going to summarize this. And I think Kel may have covered this somewhat on Tuesday. I don't know if anybody covered this Monday. We won't send her to die. Saudi Arabian girl, 18, emerges from barricaded hotel room after Thailand vows not to return her to family who will kill her. Rahaf Muhammad Al-Kunin fled her family on Friday, hoping to seek asylum abroad. Now, this is a Saudi Arabian girl in Thailand, Bangkok, who is afraid to go home because she's left Islam. Because under Islam, what do they do to apostates? What do they do, people? I know I have people in the chat room who should know that one. What do they do to apostates, people? We've got people in there. Let's see. We've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. If you're all, any one of you is listening, you should know. What does Muslims do to apostates? And nobody's answering. Maybe they're busy. Well, they kill them. They kill them. And they kill them. What are their choices? Death. Or somehow they say they've suffered and then they secretly make a place for them to hide. Oh, and Doc DLB, yes, behead them. Bigfoot, execute them. Yes. Sad, sad. So is she right to seek asylum? Here's the catch. The truth of the matter, she's fleeing her family. She's not fleeing the country. However, the country follows Sharia. The country follows Sharia, and Sharia says to kill her. Now, the argument that is being given is she's fleeing her parents. Well, she's 18 years old. Does she have a right to hide, to plead for her own life? Something to think about. This next story should disgust you, and it has to do with this one. Disgusted me. I was really shocked to find this article. Found it yesterday. It got me kind of angry. This morning. The BBC asked if Muslim teen who fled Saudi in fear of death should be able to leave Islam. This is by Rob Wow from the metro.co.uk. So, the BBC decided to ask people, should she be able to leave Islam? As if people don't have freedom of choice. This is something to think about. Would this question have ever been asked 10 years ago in the United Kingdom? Never. It's sick. It's sad. I mean, the tweet said this. 18-year-old Rahaf Mohammed Al-Kun fled Saudi Arabia as she said her family would kill her for choosing to leave Islam. Do you respect her decision? Tweet was rapidly picked up by the media Guido, and the BBC posted an edited version minus the part about respecting her decision. So, irate readers responded on Twitter with comments such as, you're a waste of taxpayers' money, and the BBC rapidly deleted the tweet and apologized. A BBC spokesperson said, we accept that the original wording of our tweet did not reflect the question being posed on air was open to misinterpretation. Open to misinterpretation? You asked if it was right to kill the girl. You asked if she had freedom of choice. You asked if she could choose her own religion. And you call yourselves the British Broadcasting Corporation? I mean, British used to stand for some things like freedom and Western society. Is it now it only stands for Islam? It's definitely, definitely very disgusting whatever they want to say they're standing for, because they're definitely not standing for much of anything. And that's what makes it even worse. This one comes from the Daily Mail. Tortured dissident who won $500,000 from Britain for its role in his rendition in 2004 is wanted for terror attacks on oil terminals and on an air base in Libya. Now, this article talks about Abdul Hakim Bahaj. He was given £500,000, which is $650,000 in United States funds. And the British gave him $650,000 for basically moving him around to black sites so they could extort information from him. Now, they gave him $650,000 because they believe that it's not legal. But this man, here's the truth of the matter. He was the leader of the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group. He was allied with Al-Qaeda, and he even got an apology after all this. He gets an apology from Theresa May. Oh, insane. Yeah, he's wanted for terror attacks. What do you think he did with that money? What would you do with £650,000 if, or $650,000 if you're an Islamist or a jihadi? Because this man is a jihadi. What do you think he did with his funds? Muhammad invested back in warfare. He didn't spend it on nice clothes and stuff like that. That's what he did. He bought more weapons for his jihadis, for his raiders, because that's what they were. They were raiders. They were thieves. Okay, going on. London investigation underway. Muslim parents furious over counterterrorism authorities questioning an 8-year-old son. It's by Christine Douglas Williams, one of the best writers for Jihad Watch. This came out January 8th. An independent exclusive, it was revealed that an 8-year-old boy was questioned by two counterterrorism police officers and a social worker at a school in East London over alleged radicalization fears. The parents, who wished to remain anonymous, said their child was frightened and traumatized. Said he was separated from his classmates at a school in Lilleford to be interviewed. On the surface, this sounds heinous. It is unheard of for children to be questioned by authorities about hateful and murderous practices without parental permission at that. One can understand why such questioning would raise eyebrows. However, the West is also faced with a jihad threat that is completely unfamiliar to Western society and Western authorities. Consider the following. She's good. Germany is alarmed by child jihadis. In domestic intelligence agency, Its domestic intelligence agency is lobbying for a repeal of laws restricting surveillance of minors under the age of 14, arguing that the country is facing grave risk from what the German media clubs dubs kindergarten jihadists. A dangerous jihadist who attempted to build an army of child jihadists by radicalizing pupils in London was finally convicted on a range of terrorism offenses. This list goes on a few more. It's long been known that Gaza summer camps train children for jihad. Again, 650 pounds for that last person. It's 500,000 pounds. Which is the equivalent of $650,000 in American funds. That's what I was trying to say, Cal. All right. I want you to think about this. Would you be questioning children about radicalization if you thought there was something going on, if you're trying to find the answer? And that's the way it has to be thought about. Now, here's another one. Facebook removes ads promoting Britain First petition to stop a mosque in the UK. Now, the Facebook police will only protect Islam. They'll never protect Christianity. They'll never protect nationalism or patriotism, but they will definitely protect Islam. It's just sad and sick. Luke May wrote the article. I'm not going to go into it, but because we've been talking about Facebook and Twitter a little bit more tonight. How about this one? This is for France. Report. Nearly all terror attacks in France are carried out by radicals already known to the police. Do you think we didn't know this one? Wow. A GlobeSec report says nearly 80% of attackers behind 22 French incidents have been on terror watch lists. Why not deport them? 97% had been on radar of authorities. Again, why not deport? Because their people in charge of migration said this to me. We can't deport. I want you to think about that. They consider themselves more of a state than a country because they are so submissive to the EU. They have given up their rights as a country in more ways than you can understand. They would rather be a submissive hound to the, or lamb, I should say, to the EU than stand up on their own two feet. Sick. Sick, sick. And things are going to get worse. This article proves, and what kills me is it's in NBC. When NBC, I mean, we're talking about the major media networks start getting this stuff, and they're getting it right. This says this is really old information. And besides the fact that liberals usually don't want to tell the truth on this issue, here's a choice they didn't have. Scary, scary, scary stuff. Going on. Hamburg. 20 strips move out to tame. Okay, and when it's called 20 strips. Now, when they mean by 20 strips here, again, this is Germany, I should say. Now, 20 cars, cop cars, went out in Germany to stop a guy who was screaming Allah Akbar, yelling loudly at the sky, gesturing. Again, it took 20 of them, 20 cop cars, to subdue this man and make sure he didn't hurt anybody or himself. There are claims that he's a nutcase. Well, anybody who follows this person who is for jihad, I am going to say, is a nutcase. However, are they insane? That's another matter. Are they a danger to themselves? Well, if they're going to try and kill you, I'm for them being locked up permanently because they're not going to. It's their religious belief. How about this one? Extreme anti-Semitism at Berlin schools. This comes from the Begin-Sadat Center for Strategic Studies by Dr. Manfred Gersten and Eva Odrinsky. This came out January 9th. And in Germany, I'm not going to be able to read the whole article, but I do think it's important. In Germany, anti-Semitism has increased in recent years on social media, in the public domain, with the political system, and in society at large. While German Jews often try to avoid locations where anti-Semitism is at its worst, school children often do not have that option. And a number of extreme anti-Semitic incidents have occurred in German schools. By examining several of these incidents in Berlin, we can get some indication of how serious the problem has become. In April 2017, a Jewish schoolboy was tormented by fellow pupils of Arab and Turkish descent at a public school in Berlin's Friedenau district. He became known in the media as Ostrom Michalski. His first name was changed to protect his identity. Not only was he insulted at school, but an older student shot at him with a realistic-looking gun. The student also choked Oscar to the point of unconsciousness. The school's population is about 80% Muslim, most of the Turkish, and some of them Arab province. The school's headmaster, who taught mathematics to the victim's class, said he was unaware of the problem. The school's administration and social worker ignored the matter even after they were informed of it by the victim's family. The parents moved Oscar to another school. The French-German public broadcaster Art has since broadcast a documentary on Oscar's story. The degree of media attention in this case received was perhaps due to the fact that the victim's father, Wenzel Michalski, is head of the German branch of Human Rights Watch. Little or no attention was paid to the fact British mother, Gemma, is a daughter of a member of the House of Lords, Baron Wasserman, and a granddaughter of the late Hugh Gaitskell, a leader of the British Labour Party, and his Jewish wife, Baroness Gaitskell. How about this one? A second-grade Jewish girl at Paul Simmel Elementary School in Berlin's Tempelhof Schoenberg neighborhood was mobbed because of her Jewish identity. We're talking about a second-grade kid. This is just a few. They're hard to read. Again, these are children that are being hurt. Switzerland. Mosques in Switzerland proven to have ties to ISIS. Duh. It's not like we haven't known this for years. Come on. There's still more stuff out there, and I do want to say thank you for listening. I can go on and on. I'm just shocked that nobody's out there telling the truth on these matters except for people like us here at Global Patriot Radio. Tomorrow, Maurice and Meg of Sharia Crime Stoppers will be here at 7 p.m. Saturday, we have Usama Dakdak and Christy Johnson, and they'll be on at 10 p.m. Listen in. They're great. Sunday, we have Eric of Kafiristan, Radio Free Kafiristan, 5 p.m. Please do come and listen to them. Then you come back Monday, we have the Real Radio Men, Big Gal and Vito of Mamma Mia No Sharia, and that's at 6 o'clock. And then you come back Tuesday, you find the beautiful Cal Fritzi of Infidels Are Watching at 6 o'clock. And you come back next Wednesday, and you will have John Ethan of Introspection. I mean, this guy is incredible on foreign affairs. Take a listen. I think he's important to listen to. I want to say thank you all for listening. Again, we've had Bigfoot, Doc DLB, Gary Comfer, Heatsinker. I don't think I've met Heatsinker before. Vorpal, thank you for joining us, Heatsinker. This information that's out there, guys, share it. Get it out there. What I'm sharing with you is important. It's important that we get this information out to everybody. How do we do that? If you want news from me every day, follow me on Twitter. Twitter is probably a place I am shadow banned there. Some days I don't put stuff there because I am shadow banned. So follow me on Facebook, on LinkedIn. If you're on Facebook and you don't have any connections to me, please send me a note telling me you're trying to connect with me because of this. My goal here is to get information out, to get the truth known. What does that mean? It means we have to stand strong. We have to fight. And if we don't fight together, we are in trouble. We have to get the truth out. We have to fight to get this truth out. And that means share. With that, I want to say thank you. And God bless the USA. Here we go, Toby Keith.
American girls and American guys, we'll always stand up and salute. We'll always recognize when we see your glory flying. There's a lot of men dead, so we can sleep in peace at night when we lay down our heads. My daddy served in the army. We lost his right eye, but he flew a flag out in our yard till the day that he died. He wanted my mother, my brother, my sister, and me to grow up and live happy in the land of the free. Now this nation that I love is falling under attack. A mighty sucker punch came flying in from somewhere in the back. Soon as we could see clearly through our big black eye, man, we lit up your world like the 4th of July. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And an eagle will fly, and it's gonna be here. When you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell, and it'll feel like the whole of the red, white, and blue. Justice will be served and the battle will rage. This big dog will fight when you rattle his cage. You'll be sorry that you mess with the U.S. of A. Cause we'll put a boot in your ass, it's the American way. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And the eagle will fly, and it's gonna be hell when you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell. And it'll feel like the whole wide world is raining down on you. It's all brought to you courtesy of the red, white, and blue.